Cannon felt that people in Brazil still had a sense that homemade food was something normal and delicious, much more so than in the UK, with its highly processed diet and long working hours. But it's also worth remembering that food cultures are not static, and just sometimes food policy can succeed in changing cultural attitudes for the better. In the 1970s, the region of North Karelia in Finland had some of the worst rates of fatal heart disease in the world. A visionary young public health official called Pekka Puska implemented a whole range of measures to address cardiovascular health all at once. Puska worked with women's groups to encourage people to cook new versions of traditional dishes, with more vegetables and less meat. He supported dairy farmers in diverting some of their land from butter to berries. He persuaded local sausage producers to take out some of the fat and replace it with mushrooms. And he recruited an army of local people to act as advocates for the new diet to their friends and neighbors. Puska also instigated smoke-free workplaces. By 2012, cardiovascular mortality among men in the region had dropped by 80%. Policy experts still debate which of Puska's various measures made the greatest difference, but in a sense, it doesn't matter. This was food policy as doing, not talking, and it worked. A good food policy is one that actually makes it beyond the announcement and gets carried out, with adjustments along the way for anything that doesn't work. The example Dolly Theus likes to give is of the city of Amsterdam, which from 2012 to 2015 brought down rates of child obesity, thanks to a series of measures that included increased support for parents, a ban on junk food marketing at sporting events, and a rule that the only drink in schools should be water. Can you imagine that here? Theus asks. The hope held out by Dimbleby's NFS report is that if enough measures can be put in place at once, as in Amsterdam, something fundamental will shift, and we will collectively reach a point where we no longer tolerate a system so stacked against healthy eating. Our forgiving attitude to an ultra-processed food supply today might be a bit like attitudes to tobacco 50 years ago, when smoking on trains was normal. There are signs that the pandemic has finally jolted us into new ways of thinking about food. Marcus Rashford's passionate advocacy has made far more people recognize how unacceptable it is to live in a country where mothers like his struggle to buy a good evening meal on minimum wage jobs. Our great-grandchildren may laugh when we tell them that English schools routinely used to sell sugary drinks for profit, that hospital food courts provided burgers and chips to people who had just undergone heart surgery, and that farmers were paid to produce the very foods that caused the most damage to health and the environment. That was what it was like, we will say, living in a country where the politicians didn't know that food mattered.